You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hello everyone and welcome to this week's edition of the Spanish Football Podcast. Delighted to say that Sydney is back from his abysmally timed holiday to join us once more. Hello Sydney.
Hi Philip, how are you?
I'm all right. You're back from your holiday and you're thrown right in the deep end once again.
Yeah.
Champions League means that you've got a busy midweek coming up.
Yeah, Manchester City tomorrow night in Seville, where I've just arrived. I shouldn't have left where I was on holiday because I was relatively close to Seville. And I've gone all the way to Madrid to come all the way back to Seville again. And then I'll go all the way back up to Madrid to come all the way back to Seville again at the weekend for Betis, because always watch Betis.
Absolutely. I'm glad to see that you haven't forgotten that in your 2 weeks away on holiday. We'll talk about match day four in just a second, and it gave us plenty to discuss, but just want to let you guys know that the content keeps coming over at patreon.com/TSFP. We're going to have a Q&A pod out on Tuesday answering your questions, a bonus pod talking this week's Champions League games out on Thursday. Plus, very soon, we'll see the return of our series TSFP Presents and our Zoom calls with our top-tier patrons. There's also the TSFP Discord. Join us. It's about €4 a month. Good value. Lots of Spanish football content. Right, match day four. It's been really good so far. We've had 27 goals in 9 games. So, Sydney, that averages?
Quite a lot.
It's 3 goals a game.
It's 3 a game, yeah.
It's 3 a game, we know that. We saw 3 in the Friday night game. All scored by Celta. They beat Cádiz 3-0 at Balaídos. Cádiz, the only side in La Liga without a point and without a goal scored. They look absolutely abysmal. But Barry Aspas is flying. He scored in every game so far for Celta twice on Friday night. Some nice goals as well. Saturday saw Mallorca and Girona draw 1-1. Mallorca thought they'd won it with an 88th minute goal from Raio, but they gave away an injury time penalty, which Samu Saiz put away for Girona. It finished one apiece. Then Real Madrid beat Betis 2-1 at the Estadio Santiago Bernabeu, the first home game of the season for Real Madrid. This a meeting of the only two sides which hitherto had 100% records in La Liga, and it was Real Madrid who maintained theirs, 4 wins out of 4 for Carlo Ancelotti's side. Real Sociedad and Atletico Madrid played out a 1-1 draw at the Real Arena, while Sevilla lost 3-0 at home to Barcelona. You were there, Sydney. You witnessed it firsthand. We'll talk about that in just a moment. Then on Sunday, Osasuna made it 3 wins from 3 at home. They're absolutely flying at the moment. They scored in injury time to beat Rayo 2-1. Espanyol got their first win of the season at San Mamés, a game in which it did not look likely they were going to win. But Martin Brathwaite, on his debut, signed from Barcelona, scoring the only goal of the game to get 3 points for the Catalans. Villarreal, absolutely flying. 4-0 winners over Elche. They're the only side, Sid, in the 136 teams that play in the top flights of England, Spain, Italy, France, Germany. I even looked at Portugal and the Netherlands. No other team has not conceded a goal yet.
But Villarreal are yet to concede.
Villarreal are yet to concede a goal. They look very, very comfortable as well in that 4-0 win over Elche. And Valencia scored 5 goals at Mestalla for the first time in 5 years. Mm. They absolutely thrashed Getafe 5-1 in the Sunday night game. The Monday night game is one for the purist. It's Valladolid against Almeria. But I'll be watching, so I hope you guys are as well. You won't. You'll be busy, but I will.
No, I won't be watching it because it's at the same time as Real Oviedo play. So you've got a double header on a Monday night, and unfortunately, the second division wins this one.
It does for you. Yeah. I'll keep up the TSFP presence. Right, let's talk about the game at the Estadio Ramon Sanchez Pizjuan. You were there for Sevilla 0, Barcelona 3. Not sure really where to start with this because so much happened in this game. It gave us so many talking points. It was a game that could realistically have ended maybe 6-2 to Barca, 7-3 maybe. There were chances for both ends. And once again, as with last week against Almeria, Sevilla actually started pretty well this game. They didn't score, but they really could have. But then Barca scored, and then the third goal, they were 2-0 up at half-time. The third goal right at the start of the second half kind of killed the game. But there are some positives, I guess, to take from Sevilla. It's just emotionally they seem a little bit destroyed.
Yeah, and it goes back to that phrase we were talking about, was it last week, when after the Almeria game, Julen Lopetegui described Sevilla as a team with a glass jaw. And because they are, and he explained that in the build-up to this game. He said, because it feels like we're a team that a la minima, I suppose what you could say, that the slightest setback, we kind of go off the rails, we lose sight of the game, and we don't have that solidity, we don't have that firmness about it, and it doesn't take very much to knock us off our stride. And I think that was demonstrated again, because although they were pretty unfortunately 1-0 down, and I suppose you could even go so far as to say, you know, even at 2-0 there was maybe a game, but at that point they just kind of disappeared from the match completely. One of the things that makes this interesting, and I've been writing about Sevilla today, so this is perhaps a bit fresh in my mind. You look at what's happened so far this season. It's 1 point from 4 games. That's their joint worst start ever, if we're taking the start as being just the first 4 games. They haven't started this badly since 1981. It's happened, I think, 3 times in their history. It's never been worse than this. They've never reached week 4 having lost all 4 games. And you could sort of write that off and say, well, it's, you know, it just happens, doesn't it? At the start of the season, it doesn't really mean anything. But the nature of the way these games have happened, and some of the recurring themes, and the fact that some of these recurring themes fit quite well with what happened to them from about around about February onwards last year, makes you think this is possibly a bit more significant than just slightly weird results. And one of them is exactly as you say, this good start and not taking their chances. I mean, let me genuinely... Now, I'm going to back away from the word genuinely in a minute, okay? But bear with me for the minute. Genuinely... Right. They could have scored 5 in the first 15 minutes, Sevilla. Now, the reason I'm going to back away from it is that 2, or is it even 3 of those very clear chances, it turned out the flag was up. Now, in at least one of those cases, I think the flag was up wrongly. So I think had they scored it, then the chances are they would have been given the goal, although obviously that wasn't to be tested because we never actually saw the lines. But you have 2 extraordinary saves from Marc-André Ter Stegen. One, the hand that he shoots out to stop Ivan Rakitic. Yeah. A really sharp low save against Youssef En-Nesyri. Yeah. Now, both of those are chances that you should probably score. I'm not going to have too much of a go at Rakitic because I think he actually did the right thing and he just was denied by a brilliant save. But En-Nesyri absolutely should score.
Yeah.
Add to that, the goal that they do score that's ruled out for offside, and a pretty clear offside in fairness. You've then got the one where En-Nesyri cuts inside and has an unforgivably weak shot when he's got a very clear sight of goal. That should go in. Again, the flag looked like it had gone up, but that's the one that I think might not have been offside. At least I think it was that one. And then you've also got the one where they're running up the pitch and I think it's Lamela rolls it into the path of Acuna, who absolutely slices it wildly off the pitch. And that's in 15 minutes. And these are 5 really clear sights of goal. 5 of them. And you just think, the other one is Isco. Clean through, gets to the edge of the 6-yard box and puts it over the bar. Again, that one, I think the flag was up. But I'd like to see it again because it's right over the top. But the point, I was going to say it doesn't matter that they're offside. Of course it matters that they're offside because maybe you could argue they're not real chances. But these are 5 or maybe even 6 really good sights of goal that Sevilla get in the first 15 minutes. And then bang, they get caught in the break and that's it. And I think this tells us something about Barcelona as well as Sevilla, by the way. Because we've seen a Barcelona side that have variety, that are direct, that can catch you, that don't necessarily need to be at their very best to be decisive. And Rakitic after the game, I don't think for a minute that he meant this as a dig at Rafa Mir or at Youssef En-Nesyri. But after the game, he said, well, that's the difference when you've got one of the best strikers in the world. You can put the ball to the left, to the right, in the air, and you know that he'll know what to do with it. He gets half a chance and he takes it. And you've got, unlike your strikers.
Rafa Mir and Youssef En-Nesyri definitely aren't among the best strikers in the world. They are a frustrating pair who can do a lot of good things.
They can.
Seemingly
they really
score.
Can. Yeah, they really can.
Okay, Sevilla have got a really tough task now to pick themselves up, not least because they've got Man City tomorrow in the Champions League. Then in the league, the next three games are Espanyol, Villarreal and Atletico Madrid. So it's feasible that they get to match day seven with maybe only three or four points. Who knows? But let's see. We'll talk about Barcelona as well, because there's loads from this game. Lewandowski, once again, showing us just how good a footballer he is and what an unbelievably good finisher he is. Okay, we knew that, but he continues to do that. His goal was, it was so good, but at the same time, so nonchalant. I mean, you absolutely knew he was going to score. The ball's played in, brings it down on his chest, sort of swivels and volleys in. There was no way he wasn't going to score. He's the leader of this Barcelona team, isn't he?
Yeah, he is. And I think it's really important that what we've seen from him is more than just the goals. Now, on the goal, I was at that end, I was behind that goal, and it's exactly as you describe it. When the ball came over to him, he made it look so easy. He made it look like there was never any doubt that he was going to score, to the extent that the chest control isn't so much a control as a setup. It's almost like he knows exactly where he's putting it off his chest. He's not just, right, I'm going to bring this down and then I'm going to shoot. It's like, I'm going to sit it just there for myself. And it's just done with an ease that I think was really quite eloquent. I think it says a lot about him, and obviously the contrast with the finishing at the other end is significant as well. But I think you're right. It's everything he does. And it's, you know, as Rakitic was saying, you can go to the left to him, you can go to the right to him, you can put it up in the air. He'll do the right thing. He'll drop in. He'll allow players to run beyond him. He takes, I think, that degree of responsibility as well. And Xavi Hernandez was saying after the game that this is a guy who's a really good player, who understands what Xavi wants from him beyond just the goal scoring. I think there's a determination there and a leadership there, which is significant, despite obviously not having Spanish yet, not having, you know, the real ability to communicate with his teammates just yet. There is still something about him that I think is driving others on. And it's partly, of course, born of a recognition from others that this is a really special player. But that recognition only lasts for as long as you continue to play that way. And he's been absolutely fantastic so far.
Jules Koundé going back to his former side and not getting a particularly bad reception at all.
No.
He played right back again for the second game, and he provided two assists as well. What did you make of his performance?
Well, I mean, first of all, I think he's a very good right back. I think it would be a pity if he ended up there all the time, but I think he is a very, very good right back. And I think it's really significant as well that, I think you're right, it's two assists. I must admit, live, the first time I saw it, I wasn't sure whether the second one really counted, if it was him just sort of knocking a corner on. But it's very definitely a head down. It's very deliberate. And the pass is brilliant to Lewandowski. It's true that Lewandowski's movement helps to make it. It's true that Sevilla are caught a little bit flat-footed, but it's really, really well delivered. I just think he's a brilliant footballer. I mean, we know this. We've been talking about him for the last 3 years at Sevilla, in particular, last two of them, because maybe in his first season he was overshadowed a little bit by Diego Carlos. But the last couple of years he's been brilliant. And we've seen a lot that he's a defender that can carry the ball out from the back, that has a willingness to play, maybe actually too much willingness at times. And I think Xavi will be careful with how he manages that once Koundé goes into the middle rather than the right-hand side. But I think he's a very good player indeed. And as you say, the response to him is a few timid whistles, but fundamentally it wasn't hostile at all.
No. Big game from Gavi as well, tearing around. These are probably the kind of games, kind of atmospheres that he thrives on, not least going back to Seville. He's from Seville, and again, the little terrier did extremely well.
He's a brilliant player. He's a really good player, and just as Luis Enrique was saying, I think it was the game at Betis that Spain played against Portugal at the start of the summer. I think it was after that game, Luis Enrique was talking about how one of the problems is that you lot look at Gavi as this kind of feisty midfielder, and you don't look at the quality and the technique and so on. And I think he's absolutely right. That said, he is a feisty midfielder. He is, and I must admit, and I'm going to be absolutely honest here, I think it's a problem. I don't necessarily think the feistiness is a problem, but he makes challenges that he just doesn't need to make. He gets cards that he doesn't need to get. And I actually think that is something that you have to be careful, obviously, because you don't want to take some of those elements out of his game. But you need to take some of it out, because otherwise you're going to have him suspended rather a lot.
Feisty is a gloriously 1990s North London
isn't it?
Word.
You're a feisty boy.
He's very feisty. All right, there are lots more things that we could talk about, but we want to move on. ask us questions. We will answer them on our Q&A pod for patrons. If there's something that you want us to talk about which we haven't on the Monday pod, send us a question for the Q&A pod. Real Madrid with their first home win of the season in their first home game of the season. This was a terrific match to watch, yeah, from a neutral perspective. I was obviously at work at La Liga TV, and I was doing it with Robert Moreno, who was the former Spain and Granada and Monaco manager, and he was saying, I was like, oh, this is a great game. It's going, nah, it's the kind of game that managers don't like, these kind of games. It's too wild, there's no control, it's all over the shop.
This is the problem with coaches, right?
Yeah,
coaches.
I was like, you sit there, be miserable, don't enjoy it. This is a great game to watch.
Exactly, coaches, you try and ruin it for all of us.
Yeah, but it was, it was end-to-end stuff. There were lots of sort of individual performances that we can pick on, but we're gonna talk about two, one for each side. Tchouaméni for Madrid. I think it's important, of course, that this was his first game at the Bernabeu as well. Casemiro's gone. Weight of expectation of him is huge. And his first game in this stadium, and you shouldn't underestimate the power of the Bernabeu, it kind of impacts you as a fan and as a journalist when you go there. So when you go there and you're playing your first home game with a weight of expectation on you, it must be a pretty pressurised environment. It did not look like it was affecting Tchouaméni at all, who has been really, really good in the matches he's contested since Casemiro's departure.
I was looking at the statistics earlier, and I'm going to confess that I don't 100% know what these statistics mean. Okay, so I'm going to ask you. Tchouaméni is, according to the statistics on AS's website, which are really quite good, the ranking that they do of each player, he is number one in La Liga for acciones. In other words, for things he does. Now, is that number of times he comes into contact with the ball, number of calculable things he does? But anyway, what it says, he's certainly active. At the very least, it tells you he's active.
Number one in actions.
Acciones, yeah, exactly. That's why I'm asking you. What does acciones actually mean? Does it mean touches on the ball? Does it mean number of plays he's involved in? Does he have to actually be in contact with the ball for it to count as a play? Or is it anything that's measurable? So a tackle presumably counts, a pass would count, a shot would count. So I suppose it's the total number of things you do. In any case, it's a good stat, because it tells you something about a player who is involved. It tells you something about, as you say, a player who doesn't hide, who's not overawed by it. I think when we look at it, as we inevitably will over the course of this season, and maybe in particular now at the early part of the season, more even than later on, in terms of a comparison with Casemiro, I think what we are getting is a player who's a bit more dynamic. I think we're getting a player who possibly wants to do more with the ball than Casemiro, and maybe won't be as static as Casemiro was, which occasionally could be problematic, of course, because when you don't have a static midfielder, by definition, sometimes that position is uncovered and you get caught. But the early signs of him are really good. I can't claim to have watched lots of him in France, but spoken to a couple of colleagues who have, and they said, look, he is really, really good. But as a recoverer, as a guy who's everywhere, as a guy who isn't necessarily running a game for you, but who stops the other team running a game at any point. And you know, but I look at him and I must admit, I see a little bit more than with Casemiro. Which isn't say better necessarily. I just mean more in terms of variety of different things that he does.
I was just checking out Media Coach, the statistics portal, which I've got access to, and he is not leading the way in terms of actions on that.
What do they call acciones?
They call it actions as well.
Oh, do they? Yeah, do we know what it means?
No, I don't know what it means. But he's there or thereabouts, though, definitely. Good news for Real Madrid that Tchouaméni seems to have slotted into this side. Vinicius Junior scoring the first goal and taking it very nicely, and he seems to have led the way offensively for Real Madrid at the start of the season, with Karim Benzema being, I don't want to say under par, but maybe not quite hitting the heights of last season yet. Maybe that's to be expected, maybe that will come, but at the moment he's not quite there yet, but Vinicius Junior very much is. I want to talk about Sergio Canales and his performance as well, because it was a really all-round brilliant performance. Not just the goal that he scored, that was, you know, lo de menos, really. Everything else he did was tremendous, and he's one of Spain's best footballers. It's a shame he's probably not going to go to the World Cup. I mean, I don't want to start having this discussion now. It's maybe a bit early, and I suppose there is time for him to work himself into Luis Enrique's plans, but he really stands out as one of Spain's best footballers, certainly in La Liga.
Yeah, he does. I mean, remember last week when I went to the Betis game on, was it the Friday night, I think it was, and we talked about it on the Monday, and I said one of the things about Canales, and it's difficult to find a proper way to define this, is just he makes football better. He just makes the game better. When the pass comes to him, the move is not normally in as good a shape as it is when the pass goes from him. He's the one that improves every move. He's the one who has clarity about what he does. He makes the right decisions. His touch is good. He might not be outstanding in terms of doing something outrageous, although I actually think occasionally he does that as well. But it's just the quality with which he does everything. And you look back on it, of course, and you think there is two or three things. Well, there's two fundamental things, I suppose, you think about his career. And I don't want to put this from a negative point of view because ultimately, you know, he's achieved a huge amount anyway, but you look on his career and it's inevitable to think, well, I wonder what could have happened if. And obviously the two big questions there are, did he maybe go to Real Madrid a little early?
Yes.
And of course, fundamentally, the injuries. And you just wonder if without those two elements, or with those two elements falling at slightly different times, whether we would be talking about one of those players that we talk about when we... I wouldn't go so far as to say a Xavi or an Iniesta. But you know that kind of that generation of midfielders, Xavi, Iniesta, Cesc, Juan Mata, Santi Cazorla, that kind of player, he sort of fits with that a little bit, doesn't he? He's a little bit taller than those players. He's possibly a bit more athletic than some of them. But he definitely fits that kind of broad prototype.
You said that top four might be a bit too much to expect for Betis. This is their first defeat of the season. They've got Villarreal up next as well, which should be a terrific game. You're sticking with that even at this early?
No, I'm not. No. I've been pleasantly surprised by how good they've been. Okay. Bear in mind that they lost this game 2-1 to Real Madrid, although admittedly Madrid had chances to have won it by more than that. But they did it without William Carvalho, who wasn't available. And then, of course, with Fekir going off very early. Because of an injury which potentially was a penalty, and obviously if Betis score first, then maybe the game is different. I've been very impressed with them. I think there might be one or two small flaws in the team still, but all round I think it's a really good team. That's a very clear identity. I think they could possibly do without European football. That might actually help them in La Liga, and of course they haven't got that that luxury. But I think I'm starting to look at them as candidates for it. That said, I still feel that the normal three and Villarreal and maybe Real Sociedad should in theory be stronger than them. But I'm starting to wonder if Sevilla are not in that list of four anymore as well.
Well, if you look at the table, they've already given up a lot of points, Sevilla, on the teams are going to be in that battle for fourth spot. Quick word about Umar Sadiq, who came off the bench to give La Real a point against Atletico Madrid. Alvaro Morata had given Atletico the lead before Sadiq's equaliser. Did seem like it came off his hand, to be honest.
I genuinely don't understand this.
Yeah.
I don't know if there's something I'm missing. I don't know if there's some... I've listened to the kind of the refereeing analysis.
Yeah.
And I couldn't discover anything except this debate about whether it hit shoulders rather than his forearm. But it looked to me very clearly to be his forearm. Mm. But I mean, admittedly, it's a replay and they can be deceptive. But no, I must admit, I just don't understand it. I think it is a clear handball. I might be wrong, but that's certainly the way it looks to me.
It stood and he got a goal on his debut. He actually scored another one as well. Beautiful
that
finish.
That was gorgeous.
Which was ruled out for offside. But yeah, he looks like an exciting signing, the kind of player that you're not entirely sure what he's going to do, but in theory he's going to score goals.
I said this the other day, didn't I? I think on the face of it, he's a downgrade from Alexander Isak, but maybe in terms of goals he won't be. I think Isak is possibly a better player, but maybe in terms of goals he won't be. And Isak had a very strange season last year. As you say, he took that goal really brilliantly. The other thing is, by the way, on that goal, the pass to him from Takekubo is fantastic. And I must confess, I am someone who hasn't always been that impressed by Takekubo. And I'm starting to look at him now in this structure and think, maybe this is a place for him. Maybe this is the kind of place where it starts to work. And I think Sadiq will score a reasonable number of goals because La Real will create chances. Not loads, bear in mind that last year, correct me if I'm wrong, was it 26 goals in 18 games at home last year? In total, not just them, in the whole game. So it's not always that exciting at home.
Can you guess what minute Antoine Griezmann came onto the pitch for Atletico Madrid in the game?
I'm guessing at 62, 3 or 4.
Yeah, 63 minutes. he always comes on in the 63rd minute. We told you why.
weeks ago, and the prophecy is coming true. So yeah, Antoine Griezmann is getting half an hour in every game. Yeah, he's had 27, 28, 26 and 28 minutes in the four matches so far. It's not an ideal situation, but it is what it is. We want to talk about Villarreal as well. They won their first home league game of the season. They're playing their home matches at the Ciudad de Valencia Stadium, Levante's ground, until Christmas, because the Estadio de la Cerámica is undergoing renovation works. They were very, very comfortable 4-0 winners against Elche. They scored four. They could easily have scored, well, I was going to say, they could easily have scored 14. They could have scored many, many more. They were considerably better than Elche. And I don't know if you've got this impression watching Villarreal in the first four games. They've been completely comfortable, like really comfortable, really sort of in control. Even when they were away to Atletico Madrid, I felt they were pretty controlled and in control of the game and playing within themselves as well. They still haven't conceded a goal. They're scoring lots as well. This is the season that they've got to step up. And Unai Emery said afterwards as well, you know, he said, listen, when he was asked about their aspirations for the season, he brought it down a little, but he said, listen,
he did, didn't he? Yeah,
we tried. We finished seventh the last two seasons behind Real Sociedad and Betis. So our objective is to get better than that. But then he did also sort of said, you know, a partir de ahí, and then from there on, if we can find consistency to be able to maybe do something special, algo bonito. So I think he realises that there's a chance, given that they're not in the Champions League, they're not in the Europa League, they've got the conference, which they will take relatively seriously, but they are definitely prioritising La Liga. They know they've got a really, really good squad of players. I think they see Sevilla being weakened, and they see that, okay, Real Madrid and Barcelona have strengthened, Atletico Madrid haven't been firing on all cylinders for a couple of years now. I think they sense that top four is very much there for the taking. And even maybe top three, who knows?
Yeah, I agree with you. And also, I mean, there was that comment from Unai Emery last night where he said, look, Atletico Madrid, Barcelona and
they're Real better
Madrid
than us.
Are únicos. They are unique. Now, obviously, you can't say unique when you're talking about three clubs, but I suppose we'll accept that. He said, and they are above us. Well, obviously, it's not true in the case of Atletico in the league table. Yeah. But I do think they are, Villarreal, the best of the rest, I think, in terms of the quality of the squad. That's not to say they will necessarily be it. But I think the point you make is a really, really good one, which I do think there's a comfort about them. There's a clarity about them, which actually was there quite a lot last year when they weren't winning games. They would draw games because you sometimes wondered if they didn't take that extra step. Now, I'm not sure if I can fully put my finger on yet what it is that means they're winning the games instead of drawing them. Although, bear in mind, they've drawn one and that was 0-0. So there is, you know, there is still...
I mean, that was a 0-0 against Getafe. It was really, really hot.
It was ridiculous. You couldn't really play, basically.
And they had loads of chances. And another day, they would have won 2 or 3-0.
Exactly. Exactly. And so I look at them and I think I think you're right as well. I think Unai Emery knows it. And I think even last year with the Champions League semi-final, Unai Emery knows that it actually wasn't good enough domestically. And there's no doubt that's the target this year. Now, of course, just because you set something as your target doesn't mean you will get it. But here's the thing. I think Villarreal are good enough to break up the top three. Now, I don't think they finish above more than one of them, but I think they might finish above one of them. Obviously, the likelihood is that would be Atletico if it's any of them.
I know, I completely agree with you. Let's see, hopefully we're not getting too carried away with ourselves. It is only match day four, but they do have 10 points from 12. Next up is away to Betis, so that's going to be something of a test as well. And that absolutely is going to be a game you're going to want to watch, which is why Sydney is trekking halfway across the country again to go and see it, correct?
Correct.
Before we go, Valencia 5, Getafe 1, in the immortal words of Gennaro Gattuso. Yeah. Sometimes maybe good, sometimes maybe very good.
Yeah, absolutely. Wow. They were really good, weren't they? And it was the intensity, but the quality with it. I thought Yunus Musa, and we've talked about this before, so I'm not going to labour the point, but playing as an inside midfielder was exceptional. On two of the goals, his pass that leads to it is gorgeous. They were just so much better than Getafe, a team that in theory are defensive and are difficult to break down. Admittedly, they were given a bit of a helping hand by Getafe gifting them the third goal 14 seconds after the kickoff. They basically worked it into their own left back corner and then said, here, have the ball. Oh, thanks very much. With the goalkeeper out of position. David Soria then dropped the header for the fourth. I think it was the fourth, wasn't it? Or was it the fifth? For the fourth of the five goals. But they were really, really good. I also love Gattuso. Did you hear what he said about Tony Latto? brilliant. He said post-game, he said Tony Latto is brilliant. He's perfect. He's so humble. Look, my daughter is only young. She's only 18. But Tony would be the ideal man for her. To which Tony Latto, I don't know if you saw this today, that he was asked about this, and he said, well, I don't know what to say. That's very nice of him, but I already have my partner.
Yeah. Sorry, boss.
Sorry, boss, yeah.
Don't upset you. He also said before the game, he was asked before the game, and he said, I think this is the best squad in the world. And he's not like, and he said, in referring to Valencia's squad, he said, no, I genuinely, not just for me, I genuinely believe this is the best squad in the world. So obviously, I don't know how, obviously that's rhetoric, isn't it, from Gattuso. But he's got the ability, I think, to make players believe that they're good and to get the best out of players and to improve the players that he's got. And he did specifically ask for a kind of profile of player who
team
has something
losers,
to prove.
Didn't he? Yeah.
Well, he said losers, fracasados, you know, people who have failed, people who have lost so far. But I think it's people who have got something to prove.
Absolutely.
He says, give me those kind of players and I will get stuff out of them. I will get something out of them. And we've seen that this season already. They'd lost back-to-back games coming into this one, but they'd performed much better than the results had suggested. And last night they were sensational.
Yeah, so and he was quick to say that, wasn't he, post-game? He said, look, I know we've been beaten before, but we are playing well. They want the ball. They don't waste it. They play it from the back when they can. There is the intensity that the kind of caricature says you're going to get from a Gattuso team, but it's not Gattuso the player as a style. And I must admit, I'm already, I don't know about you, a little bit tired of exactly the analysis that I've just given you. Where you're getting, it's not what you expect from Gattuso. Well, actually, if you look at Gattuso the manager, it is what you expect from Gattuso. And they've been really, really good. As I say, I really liked Yunus Musa yesterday. Tony Latto, who's a player, doesn't always get many opportunities, not least, of course, because you've got Gaia there, played exceptionally well. I think Nico's going to be I personally think Nico's a very good footballer. And I think he's going to be really, really important for them. Bear in mind, of course, that this is in the context of the first game at Mestalla post Carlos Soler. The potential for this to have gone quite badly wrong, I think, was there, and it didn't.
Well, they've got Edison Cavani to come into the team as well when he gets up to match fitness as well. So things looking very positive for Valencia at the moment. All right, I'm fully aware that we didn't touch on a number of points that we could have. So if you've got questions that we didn't answer, please send them to us. Q&A pod's going to be out tomorrow. In the Segunda, Albacete are top, with 10 points from 4 games after they won 2-1 at Malaga. Granada are second despite their 1-0 loss at Andorra on Sunday. Alaves and Las Palmas drew 1-1. And Oviedo host Levante this evening, which is what Sydney is going to be doing in his hotel room in Seville. We've got Champions League action this week as well, so we're going to be keeping our eyes on what the Spanish teams do there, and also Europa League as well. So make sure you join us on Thursday for our bonus podcast, patreon.com/TSFP. And if you do not want to, it's fine. It's not mandatory. You can join us on Monday for the free podcast out wherever you listen to your pods. Gracias, amigos. Adios.
Cheerio.